If you were listening the last hour, the interview with Frank Davis, I talked to him during the break, as we're waiting for F.H. Buckley. And if you don't have Silver Lodge, he has none. He sold out all of them. So I think we got some over at the Power Mall. If you want some, you better call and get them right now from the Power Mall. Because he's out of them like 50,000 boxes gone. Done. And these Silver Lodges are great. I had one in my mouth. I had to take it out so I could talk to you. But he's telling me about those products. So you may want to check that out. And the krill oil, I made sure my wife, she heard the interview. She's going to get on this krill oil. Anyway, our next guest, really excited to have him on, is new to the audience. I love new topics. I love America discussions about America and where we are, the time frame or political environment. F.H. Buckley, also known as Frank. I told you Franks are wild today. The name of the book is The American Secession, The Looming Threat of a National Breakup. He's a foundation professor at George Mason University, Scalia School of Law, Scalia School of Law. Jeez, I can't read today, Frank. God, I'm sorry. He is a frequent media guest and has appeared on Morning Joe, CNN, Rush Limbaugh, and the like. Very excited to have him on. Very excited about this book. It's a very cool book. Very cool cover. I think you'll like it, ladies and gentlemen. F.H. Buckley, Frank, welcome to the Power Hour.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, I finally read that and got that out there, and it took me a little trouble. But this book is very interesting and I think really fantastic. Tell us a little bit about why you wrote this book. What are we going to get out of it if we read it?
Well, I was looking at politics and the state we're in right now. And what I've seen is, a progressive movement that's pretty much gone nuts. Back when Obama was elected, nobody went crazy. Nobody joined the resistance. There was no impeachment. But in the last 3 years, everything, every rule of civility is broken down. We've got Hillary joining the resistance. We've got those pink hats on the mall. We've got permanent impeachment, and that's where we are now. And then imagine where we might be in a year's time if Trump is reelected and you get he gets a couple more seats in the Supreme Court. And so you ask yourself, if that's how crazy things are now, what happens when you notch it up a bit? And, and then there you go. Secession is a possibility. And, look, I moved here from Canada like 20 years back, and I lived through it there. And it's kind of surprising how these things happen. I mean, at one point you've got people saying, hey, there's a separatist. We should charge him with sedition. And the next thing you know, he's running a province, and you got a secession referendum, and it nearly passes. So,
are you talking about Quebec?
States like Oregon, and you can imagine it happening.
Were you talking about Quebec in Canada when they had that referendum? I don't remember what is that. What you're been talking about, referring to?
That's what I'm talking about. Came just really, really close to passing.
What year was that?
Well, there were two of them. One was in the one was 1980. The other was 1995.
I remember the 1995. Tell me about that environment. What? Go ahead. Explain that a little bit. You lived up there. What was that like?
Well, first of all, it was polite, right? It was Canadian. Okay.
y'all are big drinkers. How are you guys so polite and still like the biggest beer drinkers in the world? Y'all must be polite drunks or something.
More guns per capita than anywhere, okay? So, I'm not going to get into hockey fights. But, so I'm an American. I'm an American now, okay? So get that. Well, let's make that clear. Here's the message I took from it. The message was, we're moderns, so there's not going to be a civil war if it happens. See, what got the English speakers in Montreal riled, in part, was something called Bill 101, which was really an anti-English law, okay? And the Anglos in Montreal called it Bill 401. And 401 is the name of the highway between Montreal and Toronto. So what happened was, against the threat of secession, about 300,000 English speakers moved from Quebec to Toronto, okay? And, and that's pretty much what's happening now. Okay, people moving from California to Texas, and that would just accelerate it, right? So, we're not talking troops moving in. We're talking, maybe it's a good time to buy stock in U-Haul.
So the environment of the quote unquote civil war is not so much a war. It's a, they're expressing their discontent with their feet, with their U-Haul, so to speak. And we're, yes, we do see that in America. So that's basically what you're describing. So the only people who are left in Quebec, they all want secession. The only people left in California, the one who want socialism or whatever, basically is what you're saying.
Yeah, except there was something else going on in Quebec, and that is that in terms of transfer payments between the province and the feds, Quebec was a net beneficiary. Okay, it was a, you know, it got more than it gave up from the federal government, and that's just the opposite with states like California. So there's a California secession movement, and they figured out that they're spending a lot more money to Washington. They're sending a lot more money to Washington than they're getting back. So, you know, in Quebec, you know, unity federalism was called profitable federalism, whereas in California, it's profitable separatism. All right. And so what they're saying is, look, you're sending this money to people who hate you. You know, you're sending this money to the deplorables and, you know, you despise them. OK. Right. So what, you know, so you wouldn't have to do any of that if we seceded. Not only that, but if California didn't have to pay its share of the military budget, that would be enough to fund a scheme of national health, socialized medicine in California, and that would appeal to a lot of people. You know, I mean, yesterday, by the way, Bernie carried California.
Interesting. Do you know what? I didn't see how close was that vote there. Did he win by a lot, or did you check that out?
He won by a lot. Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Since you brought it up, what do you make of, it seems like the Democratic Party's at it again, and they're basically aligning against Bernie Sanders. Do you get that feeling, one? And then two, why are they so hell-bent on stopping him?
Well, you know, that's kind of interesting because, you know, I don't see a heck of a lot of policy difference amongst the Dems, really. I mean, it's just that Bernie speaks his mind, whereas they tend to cover it up. But, you know.
Well, Joe doesn't know what day of the week it is. I mean, maybe he would if he knew what day of the week it was.
I'm going to, if there's a debate between Joe and Trump, there's going to be blood on the floor. That's going to be fun to watch.
Yeah. Well, yes, it will.
I can't even remember the first line of a Declaration of Independence, okay? I mean,
yeah.
It's going to be pathetic. But Trump's got this going for him. And I got to tell you, in 2016, I worked on the Trump campaign. I wrote speeches for the candidate and for his kids. And we always respected Bernie. I mean, we recognized we were going after the same kind of people in a way. And one reason why Trump won is about 10% of Bernie's supporters stayed home in 2016. They just couldn't bring it to themselves to vote for Hillary Clinton.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, and Biden's going to carry some of the same baggage of corruption. I mean, we haven't heard all that much recently about Hunter Biden, but by gosh, there's a big story there. Okay. You know, and the press would have you believe there's nothing there. But, you know, you don't become an instant millionaire, you know, as Biden did, if you're, you know, kicked out of the military for drugs and, you have a horrible personality. You got nothing going for you except your connection to the vice president who's in charge of government policy to the Ukraine. So, in the Ukraine government gave them tons of money. And lo and behold, you know, we freed up loans to Ukraine right afterwards. It just stinks to high heaven.
Well, Frank, listen, you're just negative. I mean, coming out of the drug arrests and whatever and being hired on the board of a big corporation in Ukraine, that happens every day, Frank. What's wrong with you?
I know. You know, I should be more sunny and upbeat and say, hey, they recognized hidden value in Hunter Biden. I mean, the U.S. military didn't, but they were smart enough to realize it. You know,
yeah, he had a lot of potential.
Adjusting drugs,
yeah.
What the heck? You know?
Yeah.
So,
Biden's
flavor of corruption, I think, probably reassures a lot of Democrats. I mean, you know, this is a party that makes out like bandits. okay, in Washington. And this is something that might power secession in some way. I mean, look, okay, I'm on a hill in Alexandria, Virginia, and I'm looking across out my window at Washington, and I'm looking at a nest of corruption centered on K Street. So if you're one of those conservatives who worry about corruption, you're talking about corruption in Washington. You're not talking about Dover, Delaware, right? And if you're one of those conservatives who worry that we've got an over-big regulatory state and our lives are being micromanaged by people who are not elected in the swamp, well, you know, what you're describing is the Code of Federal Regulations and the alphabet soup mix of agencies, the EPA and the like. That's in Washington. It's not in Dover, Delaware.
So, when you look out over there, you look out from your window, do you see a black cloud and pitchfork devils swirling around the city?
Well, I'm in Virginia, and that's how many of us tend to think of Washington.
Interesting.
You know, yeah, well, it's you know, where Northern Virginia has turned. This is now a blue state.
Well, you're in there in Virginia. See, we're just going all over the place, but I think it does relate to this idea of secession. Virginia, right there, kind of the heart of it, the heart of the American Revolution. I mean, George Washington was a Virginia, Thomas Jefferson, of Virginia. I think Patrick Henry was a Virginia. I mean, some of the greatest minds of the Revolution.
Don't get me started. If you're in Virginia, you think that everything of interest in American history happened in Virginia, with the exception of a few things in Pennsylvania. But they're only interesting because some Virginia boys came and visited.
I got it. Well, let me ask you, you're in Virginia. Well, you just saw with the gun debate with Northam, you know, wanting to kill newborn babies and then wanting to take your guns, and then sheriffs, basically the majority of the state, besides these blue areas you're mentioning, saying, wait a minute, there's a Bill of Rights. You're not going to do it here. That's a secession right there, kind of a confrontation we're seeing. Well, what did you make of all that?
There's a lot of that going on. Same diff with the sanctuary cities and the sanctuary state. You're seeing that all over, and you've got local officials saying, you know, if we've got criminals in our jail, we're going to release them in such a way that the ICE people, the immigration people, won't know about it. We don't want them deported.
That's crazy. Never,
even if they've committed crimes.
That's crazy.
It's dangerous. I mean, it's what they're saying is we don't care about the safety of ordinary Americans. We only care about non-Americans.
It's insane. It's like cutting off your nose to spite your face. I mean, it's just ridiculous. I mean, these aren't like traffic violations. You know, these aren't like speeders. I mean, these are like murderers.
Well, that's how far left the Democratic Party has gone and all of that stuff. I mean, look, you know, I'll give you one for instance. There are no Fort Sumter moments on the horizon, but I'll tell you something that came the closest. It was in Portland, Oregon, I guess about 2 years back. Now, they've got these Antifa people,
mm-hmm.
and the people on, you know, the Washington Post has had 4 pop pieces about how neat these Antifa monsters are, okay?
Wow.
Well, what they did is they hold up the people at the ICE facility in Portland for a week, right? They just put barricades up. They didn't let people go in or out. So you got these people, federal workers, immigration workers in the Portland office who are being held hostage by Antifa. So what does the city do? The mayor of a city and the chief of police tell the police to just stay away from this. This is a free speech issue. It's not a free speech issue. People are being held hostage. And the hostage situation ended only after the federal government sent in some U.S. marshals. All right. So, you know, that's as close as we got to Fort Sumter.
Let me transition a little bit. Well, I think you're going to have... you're going to have a Fort Sumter moment if the governor of Virginia tries to forcibly take people's guns. You're going to have a Fort Sumter moment if that happens, I believe. Do you disagree?
I don't know about that. Was the Virginia Senate voted that bill down.
Okay.
For the moment, it's not going anywhere. The Washington Post expressed great regret about this. You know, the prospect of policemen coming into your home to search for guns should be terrifying to most Americans. Okay? Means it's open season. And
well, you know who should be terrified? Frank, you know who should be terrified is the people searching the people's homes. Not the people in the homes. The people who should be terrified are the police. Oh, you know, you're new out of the academy. Go search these homes. They're the ones that should be terrified.
Well, you know, that's exactly how the Civil War started here in Alexandria. You know, the federal troops came to take down the Bonnie Blue Flag. And the owner of a hotel shot one of the troops, and he was promptly shot, and that gave both sides their first martyrs. So you can have, you know, you can get flashpoints like that. You're right about that.
Interesting. All right, let's go off this a little bit, a little more macro, and then we'll get micro a little later. I'm really interested in this topic. I'm really glad that you came on today.
Thank you.
Going back to Quebec, you know, I don't know what the percentage is. But they speak another language. They speak French there. I don't know what the percentage is, but there's a natural divide because of language. We've seen this discussion about immigration and cultures. I am of the opinion, and I'm pretty firm on it, that I don't care if immigrants are coming in. They're good, bad, indifferent, well-meaning, the greatest people on earth. It doesn't matter. You are naturally creating a divide because they come from a different background. They speak a different language. They're a different culture. There's a natural fault line going on in America that's being created by a massive immigration. What's your thought on that?
Well, that's part of it. You know, a couple of generations in, a lot of those immigrants will, as they say, go native. But it takes a while. And the other thing, of course, that's going on is we've got schools that are teaching contempt for America to the students. Now, you know, nobody would have talked about secession 50 years back, okay? A lot of people say, but you know, let's remember what things were like in the late 60s. Well, things were radically different in a number of respects. Yeah, we had some assassinations, we had riots, we had all of that. But most Americans, just about all Americans, took great, great pride in their country. And now you've got the organs of the media, the big newspapers, the New York Times, for example, with its 1619 project, telling you that, you know, America was a pretty rotten country when you get down to it. All right? And it just cruelly mistreated a whole bunch of people. And if that lesson takes hold, you know, that's going to really fray our sense of national unity. You know, and Lincoln's first inaugural, he appealed to the mystic chords of memory. Well, you know, those chords of memory are being erased. Right now, the 1619 Project, the story there being, you have to understand all American history through the prism of slavery. That's been now exported to the schools, okay? So lesson plans are being drawn up, and teachers are being provided with ways of teaching American history, focusing solely on slavery and Jim Crow and the like. That's the message about America.
What you're describing to me, that's like the most subversive thing possible if our schools are teaching, they're teaching anti-American, really. I mean, what could be more dangerous to this country?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, just leave aside the fact that this is a great country and has great traditions and has stood as a beacon of liberty. Forget the fact that the 1619 Project, which is elements of truth, is nevertheless hugely misleading. Just leave all that aside. Even then, what you've got is a group, you know, an educational establishment preaching hatred for America. And that's just not right. I mean, we're talking public schools. We're talking publicly funded universities that are really betraying their mission. I mean, part of their mission should be to promote a sense of identity amongst all Americans and through our history. And they're doing just the opposite.
All right, we got about, I don't know, a minute and a half before the break, and we'll get more into this on the other side. What should we be unified about? What is the American identity that we did have at one time that we don't have now?
It's all rooted in the break with England and the Declaration of Independence. I mean, if you're a nationalist in America, you're a liberal nationalist in the sense that you have an allegiance to the liberal ideals expressed, for example, in the Declaration of Independence. That's what makes you an American. And if you're against that, then you're less than American.
Oh, my gosh. Let's stop this interview right now. That's the most profound thing that's been said by a guest on the show in a week. What you just said is America. I've been talking about this almost incessant, almost ad nauseum. You know, the Declaration of Independence, the idea of it, the second paragraph, you know, we hold these truths to be self-evident. I'm of the feeling that there is not a greater, more important, more significant political sentence ever, ever, ever written in recorded history. Do you agree with that?
Well, I do. I mean, let's forget the Bible for the moment.
Right. Put that aside. Yes.
Leaving that, in the secular world, no question.
Political sentence. Yes.
Yeah, no question.
Well, wow, I'm aghast. That's the way I see it. And okay, where I really want to go, and we're coming up on a break, so I'm not even going to even ask the question because, you know, you got 30 seconds to answer it. On the other side, I want to get into this concept or idea of attacking Robert E. Lee. See, I'm of the opinion they didn't really care about Robert E. Lee so much. Who they really cared about is another Virginia, Thomas Jefferson. If they can take down Robert E. Lee, then they can take down Thomas Jefferson. Thomas Jefferson wrote the Declaration of Independence. They take down what America, that is America. America is an idea. Yeah. And the idea is the second paragraph of the Declaration of Independence. That is America. Woo.
Yep.
My gosh. This is a pleasure to talk to you. This is a great discussion. F.H. Buckley will be back after these short messages. More. The book is American Secession, The Looming Threat of a National Breakup. You can get it where fine books are sold, of course, and the like. Stay tuned. More with Frank on the other side.
As you all know, everything begins with an idea. Ideas have helped shape the very world we live in. ThePowerMall.com began as an idea, allowing entrepreneurs and small business owners like yourself the opportunity to not only survive, but thrive in an era where corporations dominate. ThePowerMall.com is a small family-owned business who has partnered with companies you've come to rely on and trust over the years, like Strauss Heart Drops, North American Urban Spice, Miracle 2 Soaps, Vitamir, Numana Food Storage, to name just a few. Fight back against large corporations when you buy from thepowermall.com. Need to speak to a real person? Call Jay at thepowermall.com and receive superior customer service. Call 1-877-817-9829 right now. That number again is 1-877-817-9829. Support small businesses and buy from the good guys at thepowermall.com. That's thepowermall.com.
Break the bond to Big Pharma. Hi, it's Joyce Riley with the Power Hour to tell you about the powerful benefits of Strauss Heart Drops. Many people today are locked into the routine of taking multiple prescription drugs. Strauss Herb Company believes that everything the body needs is provided by nature. Strauss Heart Drops may clear congested arteries, restore damaged muscle, maintain healthy cholesterol levels, and flush toxins and metals from the body. They may even be helpful in treating varicose veins. And unlike prescription drugs that are packed with chemicals, Strauss Heart Drops are 100% natural and harness the healing power of herbs like garlic, cayenne, white willow bark, and mistletoe. For the full line of Strauss products, I urge you to call the Power Hour at 877-817-9829. That's 877-817-9829. Or visit thepowermall.com. And remember, beware of knockoffs. Get the original. Get Strauss Heart Drops.
Boost your immune system naturally this year with oil of oregano, a potent germ killer. This is the true wild oregano oil P73, a blend of edible spices of wild oregano grown on natural mineral-rich soils. Research published in the International Journal of Food Microbiology found that oil of oregano is an excellent germicide capable of killing a wide range of fungi and bacteria. Get it today by visiting thepowermall.com or calling 877-817-9829.
Hi, this is Catherine at the Power Hour. The Power Mall began when Joyce Riley discovered an all-natural soap that heals skin issues and can replace your bathing, laundry, and household cleaning products. That soap is Miracle 2 and is made from natural minerals and coconut extract with no added fragrances or colors and is naturally concentrated and biodegradable. I guarantee after you discover how amazing Miracle 2 products are, you'll recommend them to everyone you know. To order, call 877-817-9829 or visit thepowermall.com today. You'll learn why so many people say, it's not just soap, it's a miracle.
With dozens of food and storage companies buying up airtime all over radio, it's hard for you to know which company you can actually trust. Humana Food Storage is nutritious, is GMO-free, contains no aspartame, no high fructose corn syrup, has no chemicals, preservatives, or soy. And Humana Food Storage has a 25-year shelf life. Call Jay at 877-817-9829. That's 877-817-9829. Or order online at thepowermall.com.
America made just for you. Food stores I love to eat. Yum!
We've all heard about antibiotics, but what about probiotics? Antibiotic means against life. Probiotic means pro-life. Antibiotics kill bacteria that are infectious and harmful to the body. They also kill the good bacteria, though, that are necessary for good health. Probiotics from Living Streams replaces the healthy balance of friendly bacteria and normalizes the digestive tract. Gastritis, ulcers, diarrheal disease is just a few of the problems people develop when the intestinal flora is out of balance. Living Streams probiotics create the healthy balance needed for good digestion, suppresses growth of pathogenic bacteria, and actually increases resistance to infection. Call the Power Hour, 877-817-9829. Order your Living Stream probiotics today. They're available in 2, 4, and 8-ounce bottles, and Living Streams probiotics comes with a money-back guarantee. Get your body back in balance with Living Streams probiotics today. 877-817-9829. That's 877-817-9829. Living Streams probiotics. Everyone should be pro-life.
Welcome back to the Power Hour. ThePowerMall.com is where all the great products that we have coagulated over the years. Joyce started, of course, around 20 or so years ago. Many things for you to purchase and to think about. There's something there for everybody. If you haven't bought from us for a while or never, why not? If you're a new listener, we got a first 10 coupon that you can use. Call Jay, 877-817-9829, 877-817-9829, or thepowermall.com. Don't forget thepowermall.com. Among the other products, you know, the interview with Frank Davis, the silver lozenges, the silver gel, the OptiVita silver, colloidal silver, the super krill. I just made sure of the last break, my wife got that super krill oil. For real, I did not know that the phosphatidylcholine, the choline, and the phospholipids were in the krill oil from an uncontaminated source in a part of the ocean that has no mercury, virtually none of those things that we're worried about fish in the other part. What a product. Oh, my gosh. Anyway, you can get that at the Power Mall and more. Of course, Dr. Group will be on later this week, Detoxidine. If you're not decalcifying your pineal gland, if you're not helping your thyroid, supporting your thyroid. Iodine's not in salt near as much anymore. I mean, you can find it, but it used to be everywhere. Now it's not. If you're not getting it from here, from a good source, where are you getting it? If you're not detoxing for these products, where are you detoxing? Vitamin E, full spectrum, alpha-lipoic R, Intracal, vitamin D3, of course, all these are extremely important. Oregano, the Orega Resp right now, colloidal silver should be top in your considerations when considering this virus. Cass Ingram has been on, Frank Davis, they've all quoted research that they've done, even government research about these products, protocols that you can do to knock out this virus, precautions that you can take. Be prepared. I don't know what's going to happen. We've had guests on after guests on. It's hard to tell. I'm pretty sure you're going to have some of these restrictions like you've seen in these other countries. Is the virus going to come around and come in waves and is going to mutate? What's already mutating? What does that mean? I don't know. But better safe than sorry. And I've pled with you to even go to Walmart, get toilet paper, get whatever. Assume that you'd have to stay in your house 2 or 3 weeks. What would you need? That's how you should think. We're working at demand as fast as we can to get the food storage out. The demand has been unprecedented. I've been in this business like 9 years. Unprecedented. Unbelievable. It's really stunning. And we're working very hard to get it out to you as fast as we can. So we got limited things for sale on our site and at the Power Mall. so that we can get it out in a quicker manner and faster. The delays are staggering. The supply chains is being interrupted. There's just, I mean, I don't care who you're talking to in the industry. They'll tell you that. I've talked to other people. This is unprecedented. We do have a little bit of supplies and even our delay on shipping. We're so backed on shipping. This is, like I said, unprecedented, but we're working very hard to make your supply, make sure you are supplied and have what you need, if you do need it. So we appreciate your support. Thank you for your purchases, and we're moving forward with your blessing, with your prayers, donations, and purchases. ThePowerMall.com, 877-817-9829, 877-817-9829. Getting back to our guest today. It's really a pleasure to have him on. I've never met him. It's really good discussion. Interesting points. F.H. Buckley, Frank, his friends call him. The book is American Secession. You can get it at Amazon. His website is fhbuckley.com. You can check that out. And, we've discussed kind of this identity, war on identity in schools. It's another reason I've been on my soapbox about schools. I don't know what people are doing with their children in school. It's an enemy operation against your children's mind. They're teaching them secular humanism. They're teaching them anti-Americanism. They're coming out and they're flaming liberals and they want to uproot and destroy America. That's where they're coming out. And you're like, well, where do they get these ideas? Where do you think they got these ideas? Oh my gosh. Anyway, Frank, getting back to you, I want to get back on our conversation. Maybe tie a bow around schools, your overall impression of the school system and what impact that's having as we go forward in the future of a possible divided future.
Well, the schools, I think, importantly betrayed the students in many respects. I mean, you know, one of the things going on here is a real generational swindle, you know. You know, we boomers were famously rebellious when we were kids, and now we're the establishment, and we want to have it our way. So one of the things we do in college is we don't do real scholarship. We just do, you know, easy, facile political indoctrination. And in K-12, we got people who are basically more concerned to indoctrinate kids with diversity nonsense than they are to teach, you know, reading, writing, and arithmetic. And that's what happens when you've got a government monopoly, which is what the public schools are, you know. And you know, conservative voices, well, they don't get hired, and they get silenced. And the result is an entire establishment which is opposed to the message that America is not just a decent country, but a beacon of liberty across the world.
I've had this discussion with many people and, you know, people around town or whatever, even some heated discussions and teachers like, oh, we love these children. I know you love the children. But, you know, the arguments that they're making, if you were to tell me, okay, we're teaching about climate change, we're teaching about this and that, but we do teach them to read and write and add and count. And then you could say, well, okay, I guess they're learning to read and write. They're not even learning to read and write and to count. I mean, we're like 40th in education among the world. We're getting passed up by third world countries now. And so I just don't see any, the arguments that the public school proponents are trying to make. I just see it as if it's not a complete failure, it's darn near a failure to me.
Absolutely right. You know, you're crucially right about how we fare on international tests of student achievement. There's something called a PISA test. Okay, so you test 15-year-olds on the basis of their knowledge of English or math, or science, whatever, and we're mediocre, right? And we just live with it. And, you know, the answer is going to be, you know, more competition. But that's exactly what the Democratic Party is opposed to, okay? I mean, it's charter schools, it's parochial schools. There's no constitutional reason why they can't be supported. But as it is right now, if you think your kids are being indoctrinated in public schools, not only would you have to pay for your own education of the kids if you homeschool or send them to a parochial school, for example, but you're still obliged to pay taxes to support a public school system you hate. It's just not fair.
Well, it's not moral, and I would argue it's not even lawful if you're going to talk about the Bill of Rights. The First Amendment is, there's some First Amendment protections there. I mean, it's a thin line, but they may have an argument there. I don't know. I have to ask you before we kind of move on. You said you wrote speeches for Trump. What's it like to write speeches for Trump?
Well, it was kind of funny, actually. Like, this just came out of the blue. You know, I ended up sending a speech to Jeff Sessions, and he passed it on, and all of a sudden I'm dealing on a daily basis with, you know, Trump's kids or people, senior campaign officials. So you try to get the speaker's voice, and I think I did that. I wrote them with my wife. I think we got the voice down. Then people afterwards asked me, well, you know, how much of this speech was you and how much of it was Trump? And my answer always was, it's 100% Trump. Okay? Because he looked at it and he made changes. And you know, the changes were interesting, actually.
In what way?
Where he was coming from.
Interesting in what way?
Well, for example, let me give you one for instance. This is now spring of 2016. And what I'm thinking is, you know, there's really an opportunity for a deal with Russia at this point, because, you know, we've got this big enemy in China, and we don't want Russia to be on the side of China. And they'd love, you know, they're Westerners, okay? The ordinary
sure.
people there in St. Petersburg and the like, they're very much, you know, they go to our, they see our movies, listen to our music, they really love America. They don't really want to pick a fight with us in any way. So I thought, you know, we could cut a deal where Putin gives up the bad stuff he's doing and we get along. Okay? And this is well before anybody's talking about a Russia connection. So I put something in the speech about how I could see that, you know, Russia might in fact be worried about how NATO is circling them. And that was taken out. It was thought to be too pro-Russian. And what was substituted was a line which Jeff Sessions prepared, which was, they say you can't cut a deal with the Russians. We're prepared to find out. So, you know, afterwards, there's this nonsense about Russian collusion, you know, and here I am on the inside. You know, if there was Russian collusion, you know, number one, you know, hey, I've read Russian novels, but that's the extent of it. And number two, I was more pro-Russian than the candidate. You know, I was pro-Russian. I was more willing to contemplate a deal with the Russians. But actually, that was an example of Trump's bargaining ability. I mean, basically, what I probably had done is signaled too great a willingness to cut a deal, right? Where Trump, the more astute bargainer than me, you know, signaled an openness to talk, but, you know, let's see what you got first.
Yeah, we're not giving away the farm. You're going to come to us kind of thing.
Yeah, right. I'm the guy giving away the farm, okay?
Right.
I'm not a businessman, right? So you get a better sense. You know, and then you got the craziness, 2 years of total craziness over, you know, Russian collusion. And, you know, and I know how crazy it is. And so I'm just sitting back and watching everybody go nuts. But here it is. We're like 3 years into it. Okay. The Mueller report is out. We know there was nothing to it, but the Dems won't leave it alone. I mean, it's just a sign of a party that's lost its mind.
I'm going to ask you about some, I don't know if you're involved with this or not, and I, you know, the timeline, I know right after his inauguration, I heard some of this. I haven't heard a president talk about our republic. Our God-given rights. We, you know, we don't get our rights from government. We get them from God, and the future belongs to patriots, not the globalists. Some of this Jeffersonian sentiment, for lack of a better word, I haven't heard this in presidents for a long time. Did you have any effect on that, or was Trump coming up with that?
It wasn't me, except in the sense that everybody on board had the same message. Right. And the message was nationalism. OK. And what's behind nationalism, what we mentioned before, is our nationalism is based on the ideals of the founders. Right. So if that's the core idea, you know, if that's what makes Americans out of Americans, then you can't go wrong being a nationalist. right? So, you know, right now there are people who are nationalists who want to talk to me about what they do in Hungary and, you know, and the like. And I just tune that out. What does that have to do with me? Hey, I'm an American. I don't have to pay attention to that, you know? So, you know, don't tell me that nationalism is bad because there are crazy nationalists in Europe. All right? That's just not us.
When did it become in vogue to even – I mean, I grew up – there is no way anybody in their right mind would ever criticize Thomas Jefferson. I mean, you would never hear any legitimate person in any position – come and outwardly criticize the founders of our country. I mean, when did this happen?
It happened. It began to happen about 20 years back. There was a film that helped propel this called Jefferson in Paris, which implied that Jefferson had had a relationship with Sally Hemings, his, you know, his slave.
Who cares?
I think the thinking, I think the thinking right now is if there was such a relationship, it wasn't with Jefferson, it was with Jefferson's nephew. But you know, in any event, this was a wedge to delegitimize Jefferson, and in doing so, to delegitimize the, as you say, the Declaration of Independence and all our ideals. And now that's in high gear with the New York Times' 1619 Project.
Mm.
I mean, it's turned into a frontal attack on America.
Robert E. Lee, we saw, you know, I lose track of time. Things happen. So what's it been, a year, 2 years? Civil War statues taken down. Robert E. Lee attacked. And I'm just like, are you serious? Robert E. Lee is one of the most revered and respected Americans. I mean, outside of the founders, he may be the most revered and respected American. I don't know where you put him, but, and to see these attacks on him, and I always thought that they really were just an extension to try to get to Jefferson. I don't know. What's your impression of all that?
Well, first of all, it's recent. You know, your listeners might want to get onto YouTube and type in Eisenhower and Robert E. Lee, and what you'll pull up is a press conference where somebody asks a question, you know, Mr. President, there's a portrait of Robert E. Lee in the Oval Office, and you know, I'm wondering how you feel about that. And it's a fascinating clip, because I've never seen anything like it. Eisenhower is furious, okay? I mean, it's kind of hard to imagine a furious Eisenhower, okay? He was furious. He went out of his way to talk about how Robert E. Lee was one of his four great heroes. And this is a kid, by the way, from Kansas. That's where Eisenhower grew up. You know, this was not a Southerner, right? This was just a fellow saying, this is an American hero. As for Lee, many people don't know this, but Lee was a Unionist in 1860, in 1861. I mean, Virginia had several votes on the possibility of secession, and he favored Union. He didn't want Virginia to secede, but when it seceded, he said, I hope never to raise my sword, unsheath my sword again, except in defense of my native state. That's how he thought about it. You know, and then, you know, thereafter, he went out of his way after the war to preach reconciliation. He was invited to the White House by President Grant. I mean, he did everything he could to make Southerners, you know, recognize, hey, it's a new world and you've got to adapt to it. Okay. You know, there's not going to be slavery. You know, we have to get along with everybody, including the emancipated slaves, you know, totally opposed to the Ku Klux Klan. And in the 20th century, you know, he's accepted as one of the people who helped to bring the country together after it split apart. I mean, again, many of your listeners will remember the Ken Burns series on the Civil War.
Yes.
From 20 years
that was
back.
Excellent. Oh, that was so good.
Well, one thing you might remember is it was so laudatory of the South that at one point, I guess there was an interview, Burns had an interview with him, and somebody asked him, you know, like, are you pro-Southern? And he said, no. I was pro-Union. I'm very happy that, you know, the war was fought and slaves were liberated and the Union won. But he was just reflecting how people felt about, you know, Southern heroism during the Civil War. You know, I mean, It took a great effort of will to bring the country together afterwards. And when the Civil War series aired, there was no more Jim Crow, right? Voting rights were established throughout the South. I mean, there was no trace of really of what the South had been like 50 years before, and we had made our peace of one kind, as you know, members of the same country. Right. The effort then was, look, we're all Americans. Let's all get along. Right. North and South, black and white, whatever. And now that compact has been totally destroyed.
Let me I got a clip here. I don't know if this is what you're saying. I do want to play it since you're on. I haven't listened to this. This may be the total wrong clip. It's short. Let me play this, Frank, if you would. Let me start. Here, let me see here.
Reporters are eager to hear if Ike still agrees with Britain's Field Marshal Montgomery in saying that General Robert E. Lee should have been fired for his part in the Civil War Battle of Gettysburg. Here's the question.
President, there's a critical interest over the weekend analysis of how the Battle of Gettysburg was fought. Now, you looking back on the Second World War, did you see any major things that you think the Allies should have done differently?
Oh, well, yes, of course. All the time. But no one knows the answer. It's awfully hard to quarrel, Miss Craig, with victory. And as long as one plan brought victory in a thing that is so serious as war, it is pretty hard to prove that another plan would have brought it earlier. Now, I just want to take a word about this quarrel. I think there are a good many of you people here, both photographers and representatives of the press, have been going into my office for the past 4.5 years, occasionally. No doubt you've noticed that on the wall there are the prints of 4 men. Men that I consider, in my book, are about the 4 top Americans of the past. They are Franklin, Washington, Lincoln, and Lee. And anybody who ever tries to put me in any other relationship with respect to General Lee is mistaken.
Well, there you go.
Wow, you got it.
Wow, that was cool.
I mean, if you saw the video, you'd saw, hey, this guy was pretty unhappy.
Yeah, he wanted to make a point. You could tell the report. He wanted to make a point to that, that the lady that they were trying to get him to disparage Lee is what they were trying to do.
Yep.
Wow, that's fascinating. We just have a few minutes left. Go ahead.
Yeah. Well, you're right. I mean, you disparage Lee, and you disparage the effort at reconciliation. You disparage Lee, and you disparage Jefferson as well, and the ideals of Jefferson and the Declaration.
That's right. Yeah, you disparage half the country. I mean, I grew up in Atlanta. So, I'm old enough to where I remember, the South will rise again, belt buckles and save your Confederate money. And, those things were still going on when I was a young boy. This concept and this idea of independence, of America, of rights, of the Jeffersonian, Jeffersonian's America, to me, was much more prevalent in the southern states than in the northern states. That's me. And I adore Jefferson's mind and the Declaration of Independence ideals. So I automatically kind of slant to that. I'm not saying that we need two countries. I'm saying we need one country. But I'm very sympathetic to those ideals and that sentiment. And to just discard all that, like you said, very profoundly, you're discarding Jefferson at the same time to me.
And I wrote this book, American Secession, by way of saying, look, if that's what progressives and the left think about America, then why are we in one country? I mean, if they think people on the other side are deplorable, why do they want to be in the same country as the rest of us? And maybe they don't. And maybe it's not such a big deal. You know, back in 1861, the issue was slavery. And that was an issue where I agree with Ken Burns. It was good that the war was fought and slavery was ended, okay? I'm sorry it had to come to a war. But right now, the civil rights revolution has taken hold, and it's taken hold in part because we recognize the relationship between it and Jefferson's principles, right? Jefferson's principles were like, you know, Martin Luther King called it a promissory note that he wanted to see paid, and it was with the Civil Rights Revolution. So if there were a secession right now, and my book basically is kind of a how-to guide how it would happen, if it would happen now, what we'd not see is a rollback of civil rights. What we'd see instead would be states like Oregon going off in their crazy way.
What do you, okay, we have a minute, and I've let this interview kind of get away with you because you're just too interesting, Frank. I can go in too many directions with you, but we got about a minute or so in your book. What is the end result? What do we need to know going forward? What do we need to hold on to, or what have you?
You could easily, with the craziness going on, imagine a state having a secession referendum and it passing. And if that were to happen, that wouldn't automatically give rise to secession. It would just begin discussions. You'd have to negotiate over federal property. You'd have to negotiate over the share of the federal debt. There'd be a whole lot of discussion. It would end up in the Supreme Court. What would most likely happen would be a convention of the states, which would...
Turn that music down, Todd. Todd, turn that music down, please. Go ahead. Finish, please. We've got about 30 seconds.
I think mostly it would involve a convention of the states where we'd end up with something like much greater federalism, like the kind we had 200 years back. Right where, you know, look, if Oregon wants to do crazy stuff, we'll let it do it. And, and other states can go their own way with respect to matters like abortion.
Well, there you go.
Our problem is we're too darn big. And when you're that big, you've got people who disagree about a lot of things.
Well, the one thing we should, we're to the end. The one thing we should agree on is the Declaration of Independence and the Bill of Rights. I mean, if you can't agree on that, you're just not American to me. Anyway, I love the concept of your book. It's very cool to cover American secession, the looming threat of a national breakup, getting on Amazon. Frank, I hope you come back on again. This has been really fun.
All you got to do is whistle.
All right. God bless you. Bye, everybody.
Thank you.
Antibiotic means against life. Probiotic means pro-life. Antibiotics kill bacteria that are infectious and harmful to the body. They also kill the good bacteria, though, that are necessary for good health. Probiotics from Living Streams replaces the healthy balance of friendly bacteria and normalizes the digestive tract. Gastritis, ulcers, diarrheal disease is just a few of the problems people develop when the intestinal flora is out of balance. Living Streams probiotics create the healthy balance needed for good digestion, suppresses growth of pathogenic bacteria, and actually increases resistance to infection. Call the Power Hour, 877-817-9829. Order your Living Stream probiotics today. They're available in 2, 4, and 8-ounce bottles, and Living Streams probiotics comes with a money-back guarantee. Get your body back in balance with Living Streams probiotics today. 877-817-9829. That's 877-817-9829. Living Streams Probiotics. Everyone should be pro-life.
As you all know, everything begins with an idea. Ideas have helped shape the very world we live in. ThePowerMall.com began as an idea, allowing entrepreneurs and small business owners like yourself the opportunity to not only survive, but thrive in an era where corporations dominate. ThePowerMall.com is a small family-owned business who has partnered with companies you've come to rely on and trust over the years, like Strauss Heart Drops, North American Urban Spice, Miracle 2 Soaps, Vitamir, Numana Food Storage, to name just a few. Fight back against large corporations when you buy from thepowermall.com. Need to speak to a real person? Call Jay at thepowermall.com and receive superior customer service. Call 1-877-817-9829 right now. That number again is 1-877-817-9829. Support small businesses and buy from the good guys at thepowermall.com. That's thepowermall.com.